This is Liquidity Talks Live, the destination for updates, opinions, and insights from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk. Join our host, Planic CEO and founder Neville Roberts, and our industry expert guest as we power up the liquidity conversation.
Hello and welcome to our latest installment of Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast, season 5, episode 1, with our all new intro. Hope you like that. I'm Neville Roberts, CEO and founder of Planic, market leading fintech focused on real time treasury, liquidity and risk. Now, our topic today is entitled AI and real time liquidity optimization. Welcome to our audience today. Good morning, afternoon and evening, wherever you may be. Anyone in the audience can ask a question as we run through today. And if you do type it, put it in the comment section on the right-hand side of your screen, and I can take some of these as we go, but we can also take any at the end and afterwards as well. If you would like to ask a question, please let us know who you are, and if you possibly can, your role, so we have some context. One other thing before we start, we've had quite a few requests from previous audience members to be part of our podcasts, and I promise we will get to you all. But if you'd like to be part of the podcast in the future, just email Nick Appleby, whose email will appear in the comments section in a minute, and we can make that happen. Now, today I'm joined by our guest speaker, Hervé Carrère, who is the CPO at TCM, to discuss AI and real-time liquidity optimization. So welcome, Hervé. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Neville. So I'm Hervé Carrère, the CPO at TCM. TCM is the ex-Finastra Treasury Capital Market business unit that now, since the beginning of Feb, operates as a standalone entity. So at TCM, we are fully specialized in treasury and capital market business. Our focus is on shaping financial platforms to help institution, you know, to operate their treasury in real time. You know, I'm really, really excited to be here today with you, Neville, to discuss the liquidity challenges and opportunities in front of us.
Perfect. Thanks very much. Now, I know I start this every podcast about just talking initially on football. I know you're not a huge fan, but you did tell me yesterday who you supported. So if you'd like to let the audience know, that would be great.
Yeah, I'm quite a big fan of the Olympique Lyonnais, which is a French team, you know. I used to follow that team since, you know, early 2000s, you know, and what they did, you know, from 22 to 28 was just amazing. They trained some very big, you know, stars like Benzema. And even when you look at them today, you know, I think they starting very well, you know, fighting against PSG and the Olympique de Marseille. So yeah, I'm a big fan of the Olympique Lyonnais. Yeah.
Perfect. All right. And as you can tell, everyone knows I'm a Liverpool fan. That just happened to be there in the background. It's just coincidence, honestly. Look, so onto the topic today itself. Let's set the scene, right? Why is liquidity optimization becoming, you know, so important, if not essential today?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. When you look over the past few years, you know, we can see that the entire financial ecosystem has accelerated. You know, payments that used to take days now settle in seconds. Consumers, you know, expect funds instantly, and businesses usually operate across time zones. We also see the emergence of instant payment schemes like FedNow, SEPA Instant, that create near immediate outflows, you know, forcing treasurers to match liquidity more dynamically. E-commerce is global. It means companies, you know, receive and send funds across multiple time zones. And we don't have anymore the concept of quiet period. It never stops. So the old model, which was, you know, waiting until the end of the day to reconcile and plan liquidity, simply cannot keep up. Think of a global company making payments across, you know, Europe, the US and Asia. When one part of the globe is closing, the other one is ramping up. And at the end, you know, liquidity pressure don't respect business hours anymore. So the traditional end of day reconciliation cannot detect intraday funding gaps. With this model, you know, a surge in outgoing payment that could happen at, say, noon may go unnoticed until it's too late. And by the way, you know, regulators see it as well. They now expect companies to actively monitor intraday liquidity exposures, and not just end of day snapshots. And it means, you know, real-time data, real-time control, real-time action must be in place. Regulators expect banks, you know, payment service providers to demonstrate intraday liquidity risk control, especially under BCBS 248 stress scenarios. And by the way, they want visibility across all rails, not just, you know, the major clearing system. So definitely, you know, changing.
And look, it's been such a huge change. If I rewind 10, 12 years, it was more of an education process for the banks then, in terms of this is really important. And it was, in their view, start day, end of day, that's enough. Then it moved to intraday. I need more updates during the day, but now it's real time. All those things that you said, it's not enough to just do them a few times there, have a look. You literally have to have a continuous view. So it's moved on a lot. What, just in terms of you know, traditional buffer based liquidity approaches, what limitations do you think they have today in the world that we've just talked about?
Yeah, it's true that for decades, you know, the industry solved the liquidity uncertainty with buffers. So keep more money in the account just in case, you know. But the buffers are expensive and they trap capital that could be used for growth, lending or investment, you know. Still today, we see that many corporates keep 15-20% liquidity buffer due to poor real-time visibility. We also see some multi-currency payment service providers that usually have capital blocked in euro, GBP or US dollar account just because rebalancing rules are static. So these buffers at the end represent a huge opportunity cost and they reduce capital efficiency. And if you add to this, you know, the fact that the traditional systems can't react to real-time volatility, it means that, again, you know, a surge in outgoing payments that would occur midday won't appear in the forecast until nightfall, and it's far too late to act. So intraday, you know, rhythm shift by day, by weeks, by season, but buffer-based rules do not adjust dynamically. At the end, liquidity gaps emerge unnoticed. They create funding stress and operational risk that we could avoid with the right tooling. So, you know, because this approach is in place, there is still lots of manual process, you know, and treasury teams, you know, still rely on spreadsheets, EVD, emails, you know, only periodic checks and manual reconciliation. And in a high velocity environment, which is the one we live today, this processes, you know, creates delays, error and blind spots, you know. So if you combine manual workflows on one side and buffer-based approach, it's just impossible, you know, to keep pace with always on payment flows. And in a high velocity environment, you know, relying on this approach can be seen as a liability.
Yeah, and look, we've seen with all the banks that we talk to and payment service providers, the rise in instant payments and the instantaneous nature of that instant settlement now in Europe, the limits being unlimited, it can cause chaos, right? Because it's not as predictable as it was. And, you know, we're all trying to make it as forecastable as possible. But that's another angle as well that we have to think about. In your view, Ave, that, you know, what's the rise of multiple payment rails, do you think that must have increased liquidity complexity out there? Because it's not just a few rails now. There's rails companies I've never heard of popping up every day, but the complexity that brings must be interesting for a bank to react to.
Yeah. The expansion of global and instant payment ecosystems, you know, has completely changed, you know, how liquidity moves and has significantly increased the operational burden on, you know, the treasury teams, you know. When you look at it, you know, the number of rails has completely exploded. We have instant payments, we have cross-border schemes, card networks, digital wallets, as an example. And so because we have more and more payment rails, you know, we have more and more headache for the treasurer. You know, a company, you know, will simultaneously operate on SEPA, SEPA instance on Swift GPI, SHAPS, ACH, whatever, and each rail has different cutoffs, you know, settlement timings, exactly, and behaviors. Yeah. So predicting outflows becomes, you know, harder because each rail generates its own settlement pattern. And the result of all this is fragmented visibility. A treasury team may have to go to check 10 different portals to start understanding its true position. That lack of aggregation makes the liquidity optimization almost impossible. Yeah. And as there is no, you know, because, you know, there is no unified view of cash movement, it becomes really, really difficult to understand the real time across currencies, across banks, and across rails. And it is a vicious circle. You know, this situation increases reliance on manual monitoring with higher probability at the end of the day of missing liquidity shortfalls. And by the way, you know, because these rails operate 24/7, liquidity swings can happen anytime, you know, day, night, weekend. And payment velocity increases volatility with an expected surge able to drain an account in minutes. So it's really a different, much more complex world.
And in that fragmented world, you know, the time it takes to log on to 10, 20 portals, write them down, aggregate them, put them in a spreadsheet or a platform and get the answer out. Time's moved on and liquidity could have shifted. So if only there was a software product that could help you, eh? Anyway, we have one question come up from Dan Feeney. Hi, Dan. And it's, are the large core banking vendors threatened by the size and scale of Stripe and other global fintechs converging AI and stable coins in the cloud? My answer to that is yes, AI is a constant threat, not just to how you treat data, but to developing code, writing products, the impact it can have. So, and it's not just Stripe, it's smaller startups as well. They're all moving at velocity that can impact you know, the core banking players. Is that how you view it, Hervé?
I think you said it all. You know, it's a complete change of paradigm in our world. Definitely, yes.
Yeah. Okay. We may have touched on this, but what role does data aggregation, I think, across the enterprise and the end-to-end visibility you need, you know, play in modern treasury ops? Because it's not good enough now just to have a view of one rail. As you said, you have to look across them all and get a consolidated view for the whole of the bank.
Yeah. And there again, I think this is the core of what defines modern treasury operations. You know, the shift from reactive spreadsheet-driven process to something which has to become more and more predictive and, you know, driven by real-time liquidity intelligence, which implies AI, but AI without clean data is just not possible. So the solution at the end to the current liquidity challenge must start with data. And by data, I mean unified data, normalized data, and real time, so that you can create a single source of truth for liquidity. Yeah. And this is, again, the first step, you know, even before considering AI or proper forecasting and automation or optimization. You need to build that, you know, single source of truth. So it means, you know, the aggregation to see all bank accounts, you know, all payment flows, all rails, yeah, and all currency in one place is the most important. Because, you know, it gives visibility for decision making, you know, and only then, you know, you can start building predictive capabilities with AI. So once in place, you know, and it's the first challenge, you know, data aggregation enable AI that will help to detect patterns, to assess risk signals, to generate, you know, different kinds of forecasts, you know, a probabilistic forecasts, which are different, could help to identify anomalies, unusual movement, and also produce insights. But obviously, you know, you need clean and exhaustive aggregated data to start leveraging AI. And that's the first focus, you know, when you are considering, you know, moving to what I call modern treasury management.
Yeah, and it's quite a complex process. Well, it seems straightforward, but all of these multiple input rails, you're right, it has to be cleansed, it has to be normalized, it has to be real time, so you can't take too long. It needs to be relevant, aggregated, before you can even then get visibility of liquidity and then act on it. So there's a lot of pre-processing before you can get that view and then act. So that's quite a lot of work, and you need to do that in real time too. Do you think that AI has the ability, and particularly around liquidity forecasting, to move Treasury from being, you know, reactive to predictive, so they can, you know, spot things that are coming and react ahead of time and start to learn that way, are they?
Yeah, I mean, AI is where the real transformation begins. It's still the early stage, but you know, AI model can analyze thousands of variables simultaneously. You know, transaction seasonability, partner behavior. Think about FX movements. You know, the market sentiment, day of week patterns, and things like this. You know, I recently read an article from J.P. Morgan, and they estimate that AI can reduce the forecasting errors by up to 50% versus the traditional method. So still to be proven, but the potential is enormous, you know. There again, you know, I was mentioning a rolling forecast. These models generate what we call, you know, a rolling forecast, which is not just, you know, your position tomorrow, but a probabilistic range for the next hours, the next days and week, you know. And they can also simulate liquidity stress in milliseconds and help answering questions, you know, like interactively, like, what happened if today's inflow dropped by, let's say, 20%, you know, and you can see the simulation, you know, in milliseconds. So at the end, you know, I think, yes, it's fully transformative. It helps generate insights that enable treasury operations to progress towards, you know, smart, intelligent automation, like things like liquidity-aware payment sequencing, things like automated funding transfer, smart routing, you know, across multiple rails, you know. And at the end, you know, AI will allow flagging risk before they become problems and identify your opportunities that human couldn't necessarily identify to free up idle cash. And the result should be fewer surprises, fewer emergency transfer as well, and obviously dramatically reduced buffer requirements.
No, I agree. Look, just on that JP Morgan point, when we've analyzed liquidity, or the potential saving some liquidity in the UK faster payment scheme, you know, we're seeing 30 to 50% savings in there versus the traditional or the current rule base. So there's lots of opportunity. We do have a very interesting question from Nick Nichols. Good morning, Nick. It says, how will AI support and protect a firm's liquidity from social media-driven runs, such as the one we saw with Credit Suisse and SVB a couple of years ago? I remember one of our first podcasts we had, it was just after the impact that SVB had in Credit Suisse, and we thought, for all the platforms and systems you had and AI looking for things, the speed at which those banks got impacted was highly influenced by social media, and the run happened, you know, within a couple of days. And I'm not sure there's any technology that can save that currently, but it's interesting. It's not just the process they have; it's the, you know, the external social media view of a bank and how quickly that can impact a bank too. So thanks for that question, Nick. Right, payments. Right, payment sequencing, prioritization of work, throttling. Can you explain that, how in a predictive liquidity model, how do those work and how can those impact liquidity as well?
Yeah, so there again, if you start from where we are today, you know, today in traditional environment, you know, payments are usually processed in the order they arrive, you know, so simple FIFO queues or static priority codes. But in a world of instant payment, you know, 24/7 settlement and intraday volatility, we cannot continue with that approach. So a predictive liquidity model changes everything. You know, it doesn't just, you know, forecast your position, it acts on it, you know. So these systems, you know, look ahead at expected inflows, funding costs, currency balances, settlement deadlines, and then automate the sequence of payment based on real-time liquidity. If you like, we can think of it as a smart traffic controller for your cash flows,
yeah.
You know, sequencing payments based on priority, timing, and available cash. And if we take a few examples, you know, imagine, so the system is predicting a mid-afternoon liquidity dip. Then it can automatically, you know, delay low priority payments by X minutes, you know. It can route automatically overs through different rails with better timing, or recommend, you know, a short-term internal transfer. So with this type of model in place, you know, a large company can delay low-value non-urgent payment to avoid breaching liquidity thresholds predicted in the next hour. And they can also generate alerts, you know, things like there is a high-impact supplier payment which is detected based on what, you know, is in place. I can see that there will be a funding gap at this time, you know, and we recommend removing, you know, a certain 5 million euros from account B to cover that gap. So at the end, you know, these are recommendations, you know, and you can go step by step until you trust the model. Yeah, treasurers need to remain in control, but with this, you know, intelligent automation doing the lifting, you know, if you like. This is the basis from firefighting to what I call orchestration, you know, pure orchestration of, you know, recommendations.
I think we've seen, in terms of requests to us, we've seen a lot more requests for payment control, optimization, throttling. You can't throttle everything, right? But we've seen a lot more of that probably in the last 2 years. So as well as AI, we have seen that. What advances are you seeing as well in AI-based anomaly detection as well for treasury payments looking forward and back?
Yeah. There again, what we see is completely transformative because AI monitors inflows and outflows minute by minute. So it can spot unusual movement immediately instead of waiting for the end of the reconciliation. Whether it's a missing flow, an unexpected surge, or an oversized payment, you know, this can be, you know, automatically identified. And so at the same time, AI is able to spot irregular patterns the moment they happen. So this is just not insight. It's about, you know, risk reduction. When AI detects anomalies early, it helps prevent operational error and counterparty issues. You know, for example, you know, again, you know, it can flag a sudden oversized payment from a dormant account, trigger a fraud review before funds are lost. It can also detect things like when expected partner bank inflows don't arrive on schedule. And so it helps identifying potential settlement problems before they escalate. We can also use AI to identify what we call an partner recognition. You know, the model is able to understand seasonality and behavioral trends, and it can differentiate the truly unusual from the normal volatility. You may have, you know, payments usually spiking on Fridays. This won't be identified as unusual because it has the intelligence to go into this level of granularity. So again, you know, I was mentioning, you know, AI can do predictive stress analysis, and that's something also, you know, simulation of liquidity shocks that, you know, can help at the end the treasurer to gives time to act because before the shock become a reality.
I think we've also seen with some of the work we've done that you have more of a chance to spot those black swan events as they're called. Even though the definition of one is it doesn't happen that often, not easy to predict, they're actually becoming, with the advancements in AI, they're easier to predict when in previously, it's just when they happen. So that's a huge advancement as well. It's not just something may happen to us one day. Be able to predict them is huge for the industry. Okay, well, look, we've only got 5 minutes left. Let me move on to thinking about tokenized assets and programmable liquidity. Well, you know, what are the opportunity and risks with that?
Yes, opportunities and risks. So first thing is when you consider on-chain rails, you know, they can deliver a real-time transfer of value. So they eliminate the lag between instruction and settlement. So this means, you know, obviously a faster internal mobility of funds, moving liquidity between entities or accounts as soon as position shift, not waiting for the end of day. It means also, you know, tighter cash forecasting loops. And it may mean as well, you know, what I call programmable DVP style flow, where, you know, delivery and payment can be linked in code, reducing operational risk tied to asynchronous steps. So programmable liquidity allows to code treasury rules directly into smart contracts. So the system can now act with when predefined threshold or events occur automatically. So when account X reaches a certain threshold, move liquidity automatically. When settlement conditions are met, release payment instantly. So all these things are possible. And this is the next frontier of, you know, instant settlements and things like this. But it's not a free lunch. You know, when you look at today's blockchain ecosystem, it's fragmented, you know, different protocols, different standards, the data formats complicate reconciliation across chain and traditional rails. If your liquidity lives across multiple ledger, you know, stitching together a single source of truth is non-trivial. And again, without this, you know, real optimization is hard. You know, policy, you know, regulation, supervision are still evolving. And treasurers need clarity, you know, on how tokenized instruments are recognized in their jurisdiction and what reporting or control must be in place, you know. And then again, we are back to real-time data aggregation, you know, which is not easy. Exactly. You know, you need connectivity, you need APIs and proper governance and control to define as well who can encode the rules, you know, because how changes are approved and how exceptions also are handled, because, you know, programmable also means you can program mistakes, you know, and guard rails must be in place to avoid this kind of situations.
No, I get it. So if you're a treasurer, lots of things on your mind, what would you be prioritizing over the next, say, 1 to 3 years? You probably can't think beyond three because technology changes too quick. What would you be prioritizing?
I think the first thing, again, is a strong data foundation. You know, without real-time data aggregation, you know, nothing else works. So unified API, investing in unified API, in data normalization, in real-time bank connectivity. So that's the first thing. And then invest in AI capability, but not just tools, you know, people who understand data, modeling and treasury as well, you know, and partner with fintechs, you know, payment innovators, AI-first treasury toolings can accelerate that journey. So if I have to select three, probably these would be the three top priorities.
Perfect. And if final question, if there was one takeaway, it's always our last question, Hervé, if there was one takeaway you could give the viewer or the listener today, what would it be?
I think, you know, if there is one thing to remember, it's, you know, real-time AI-driven liquidity optimization is now and will become more and more the difference between, you know, keeping up and leading in that 24/7, 365 settlement environment. So it's an absolute must to move into this technology modernization. But it's not only technology, and it's a mindset. You know, you need to move from reactive to predictive, you know, from manual to autonomous, from fragmented to orchestrated. Yeah,
perfect. Well, unfortunately, we ran out of time today. So thank you very much, Hervé, for joining us today and sharing your views. It's been excellent. If anyone asks questions after the event, then we will answer them later. I see some coming through now. So we will do that and get those answers out. That concludes our latest Liquidity Talks live stream and podcast. We'll put the podcast on LinkedIn, Spotify, Apple Music, and other media outlets and streaming services very soon. So look out for that. Thank you very much. Look out for our next podcast, which is next month. My name is Neville Roberts. Thank you for tuning in and goodbye.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Liquidity Talks. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest developments and industry opinion from the world of treasury, liquidity, and risk.